Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. You can hear the show live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and there are many more podcasts for this and all our other faith radio shows available on our website. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And thanks so much for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Well, welcome, and it's going to be a hot one today in the upper Midwest. I was looking at some of the temperatures, and here in the Twin Cities, it's going to be 91, but our heat index, 100 degrees. And if it's going to be a blazing day where you are, make sure you stay hydrated. Take plenty of water or Gatorade with you. And, you know, if you see somebody working outside today, why not do a little service project and, you know, give them some water, something to drink. You see somebody doing some outdoor work, maybe even a homeless person on the street. Do a little act of kindness and keep them cool today because, man, oh, man, it is a hot one. Hey, if you are a single Christian and you're wondering, how do I approach dating and marriage in this brand new world of ours, the 21st century, you want to stick around. Or if you know somebody who is single, encourage them to join us here because in about 10 minutes or so, we will be talking to Lisa Anderson, my friend from Focus on the Family. She heads up boundless.org, and she has this cool new book out. It's called The Dating Manifesto, A Drama-Free Plan for Pursuing Marriage with Purpose. And Lisa is single herself, and she's talking from personal experience, and she will have some great biblical advice for you if you find yourself in that place in life right now, whether you are never married, whether you are single again, whether you're widowed. How do you approach dating from a godly perspective in the 21st century? So stick with us on that coming up here in just a few minutes here on the Faith Radio Network. You know, I do receive emails, and if you have a question for me about marriage or parenting or child development, Christianity and culture, I'd love to hear from you. The address is drbill@myfaithradio.com. Just drbill@myfaithradio.com. And I heard from Danielle, who listens to us in St. Paul. And Danielle says, "Dear Dr. Bill, I'm facing a big problem with my 3-year-old daughter. You see, my ex-husband, her father, was in prison for 9 months, and then he disappeared in Mexico. I don't know where he is now, but he's called and talked with my daughter a few times. I don't know how to explain all this to her. She wonders where her daddy is and why he won't come to see her. This breaks my heart. I don't want to hurt her more by sharing how I really feel about her father. So what do I say?" Well, Danielle, obviously, you have experienced a lot of pain because of your ex-husband's behavior, and I feel for you. And I guess I would say this, at 3 years old, your daughter really doesn't require a long, involved, detailed explanation. Simply explain to her that sometimes people make bad mistakes in their life and they do things that hurt others. And let her know that it makes you sad that her father doesn't come to visit her, and then it makes God sad too. You really want to empathize with her. Tell her that whenever she's feeling sad that her daddy doesn't come to see her, she can pray to Jesus and tell him her feelings. And you might even guide her in some simple prayers, helping her to express her sadness to God. That's okay. David expressed sadness to God. Job expressed sadness to God. It's just fine to express sadness to God. And also, you know, in her prayers, she could ask the Lord to help to work on her daddy's heart, that he might change her daddy's heart, and that maybe her daddy would have some kind of a turnaround or come to know Jesus. Explain to your daughter that sometimes people make bad choices because they're hurting inside and they've never learned how to love themselves like God loves them. And I'm guessing that's the case with your ex-husband. Now, Danielle, as your daughter gets older, as she matures, you can explain more of the circumstances surrounding her father's absence. But also, you want to do this. You want to set some firm boundaries with your ex-husband to protect your daughter from any future pain. And in the meantime, here's a suggestion for you. Your daughter is really going to need some positive, loving male role models in her life. And I don't know if you have extended family nearby, if there's a grandfather or an uncle who could play that role in her daughter's life. And if not, perhaps a good family friend, a pastor. But, you know, she's going to need that, especially with the fact that she's right now expressing this real sadness and this real need for her daddy. And it just doesn't sound like he's going to come through for her. So, you know, I'm going to be praying for you, Danielle. When I get emails like this a lot, and I just, man, it breaks my heart. So please know that I will be praying for you. And I will just ask the Lord that he will intervene in a miraculous way in your life and in the life of your daughter. Was looking at some of the research on kids this week, and I found this interesting. If you have younger kids, this might interest you, or younger grandkids. Is your child a picky eater? Well, there's probably no reason to worry about that, but for a small portion of kids, it could signal emotional issues that should be checked out. There's this new study out that found that preschool-age kids who are extremely selective about what they eat, or kids who even dislike being near certain foods, are more likely to have underlying anxiety or depression. I didn't realize there was this link, but they found that of the kids studied, and obviously a lot of kids are just, you know, generally picky, but of the kids studied, only 3% of children were actually that picky, where they, you know, didn't even want to be around a certain food. About 18% of kids are less picky. The researchers describe them as, I like this, engaging in moderate selected eating. And those kids will only eat a narrow range of foods. You know those children. You know, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about if you have a grandchild who only wants to eat pizza. The researchers found that kids with either level of pickiness were about 2 times more likely than other children to develop anxiety symptoms within 2 years. Nancy Zucker at Duke University School of Medicine was the lead author of the study, and she says typical pickiness, such as, you know, kids refusing to eat their vegetables, that's probably merely what she calls normal dislike. And she says those kids will typically outgrow their pickiness as they mature. But Dr. Zucker says severe pickiness may be the first clue for parents that a child is experiencing anxiety or depression, and they may want to seek help from a mental health specialist. Moderate pickiness, less concerning, but, you know, as you realize, if those kids that are moderately picky, that can make family mealtimes a battleground. And to avoid that, Dr. Zucker suggests that parents try to introduce new foods at random times during the day. Now, here's Dr. Meyer's advice on that. Assuming your child doesn't have emotional problems and is simply one of those normal picky eaters, I suggest you cover his uneaten dinner with plastic wrap. You put it in the fridge, and you serve it to him for breakfast the following morning. You know, there's nothing like cold steamed broccoli to start off your day. And trust me, it works if you don't give in to your child's request for snacks later on in the evening. That's the mistake a lot of parents make. You know, they say, well, if you're not going to eat your dinner, that's it for the evening. And then later, you know, around 7, 8 o'clock, I'm hungry, and they give them something. They give them a bowl of cereal or something, and that totally defeats the purpose. So if you stick to your guns on this for the, again, the normal picky eaters, not the kids that have some kind of anxiety issue going on, you can teach them fairly quickly to enjoy a variety of new foods. Well, it's 12 minutes past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer. Coming up next, my friend Lisa Anderson joins us as we talk about dating in the 21st century. Keep it right here on Faith Radio.
The conversation continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
Welcome back. I want to say hi to our friends who are listening in Waterloo, Iowa today on Faith 1090. Perhaps you've tuned in Sioux Falls, South Dakota on Faith 1270, or you are listening in the Fargo-Moorhead area on Faith 1200. Thank you so much for taking us with you this weekend. My guest this hour, Lisa Anderson. Lisa is the Director of Young Adults for Focus on the Family and the host of the popular weekly radio program and podcast called The Boundless Show. Lisa's writing has been featured in newspapers and magazines, and she writes regularly for Boundless.org. She's a frequent guest on national TV programs, and she speaks around the world about relationships, faith, and the many challenges facing today's young adults. Lisa has a brand new book out, which is called The Dating Manifesto, a drama-free plan for pursuing marriage with a purpose. And she joins us on the Faith Radio Network. Hi, Lisa.
Bill, it's great to be here.
Great to have you on the program today. And I should mention, obviously, because you work for Focus on the Family, you currently live in Colorado Springs, but you grew up in Minnesota, correct?
I did. I lived there when I was small. It's actually home that I go back to now because my folks had retired there. So I have to give my own shout out to the Fargo-Moorhead area because that's their listening area. I was just there last week, in fact, and the women of the church did a little book launch party for me. So great time. So hi, ladies, and all of you out there.
Now, the town you grew up in is kind of a map dot over there in the Red River Valley. What's the name of the town?
It's called Wolverton. So it's about 20, 25 miles south of Moorhead. Little tiny farming town.
Okay. And I actually visited your family several years ago, and I had a chance to participate in the sugar beet harvest.
Did they put you to work?
It was great.
Were you driving truck all night?
I learned something new about sugar beets that I did not know, and that they can spontaneously combust. That was You better explain that, because if anybody is ever going by a sugar beet pile, it could just blow up at any second. They could become like a human torch. Well, so tell us about that.
Well, what's funny is, and I'm certainly no expert, but my brother-in-law, Mark, is. Sugar beets are actually a pretty lucrative crop, but they're also very fickle, and it's a very touch-and-go situation. They can easily be flooded out early spring if you get too much rain. And then after you dig them up, it's a very crazy weather situation because they're piled, they're put in piles and brought to kind of a dump area, hence the truck driving situation I was talking about at all hours. And if it gets too warm, they really just, they'll start rotting, and you can lose the entire crop or good portion.
Sorry, your cell phone's breaking up there, Lisa.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, they can start rotting, or you can, there is apparently this possibility of combustion, which I have never seen personally, but I have heard stories about. Yeah.
Yeah, so Mark, so your brother-in-law took me, we were actually out in the fields harvesting with him. I don't know is it a combine? What's the device that actually, when you go through the fields and you harvest them, what was I riding in there? It was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, what is that? I don't know exactly what, it's like a digger or something like that. Some form of, this is clearly, okay, so I did live a portion of my life in California too, Bill.
So you've forgotten now.
Only a secondary farmhand person.
Okay, so, all I can say is it was a kick, and probably the most interesting thing about the whole harvesting experience, Lisa, was when I'm up there with Mark in the cab, and we're going through the fields harvesting the sugar beets, and I'm seeing these rats run through the fields.
Yeah, that's not okay.
No, and I'm thinking to myself, what happens if the rats get caught up and they end up in the sugar beets? And I mean, I guess it could add extra protein to your your breakfast cereal. But
you know what? The next time you buy a bag of sugar, just think about that. There's something to keep in mind. I'm just being honest.
Okay. Well, I must say, it was a great experience for me. I had never been involved in a sugar beet harvest, and it was one of the highlights of my life. So tell Mark, thank you so much.
I have to give him a hard time because it's big business. He runs with GPS now and all this stuff, and I'm like, is this really even a job anymore?
Wow.
He's like sits in this air-conditioned cab with listening to his talk radio. So,
there you go.
So it's great. Good fun.
Pretty impressive. Okay, Lisa, so you have this new book out. It's called The Dating Manifesto, and a lot of it really is based on your own personal experience. You are a single woman. You've been in the dating world, and you, I know you. You, when you date, you try to date with purpose. You try to date from a biblical perspective. You're not just a hit and miss, swing from the trees kind of a woman when it comes to, you know, the guys you go out with. But in this day and age, let's first of all sort of paint a picture of the dating landscape for us in the 21st century, because it's very different from mom and dad's dating years. I mean, it's in fact, it's almost scary in some ways. So tell us a little bit about how the modern single, let's first of all talk about the world, not Christian singles, but the modern single person approaches dating today. Let's say somebody in their 20s or 30s.
Okay. Yeah, so basically I use an illustration in the book where I talk about speaking on a college campus, and after giving an entire talk on dating, a guy raised his hand and he actually asked the question, so how do I actually start dating? And it made me realize, because I thought he was joking, I'm like, I just talked about dating for over an hour, why are you asking this? And it made me realize that no one really can define what dating is in our culture anymore. And what we have as an alternative is we have one of two extremes. We have the hookup culture, which is basically, you know, friends with benefits, kind of just no strings attached, kind of a sexual relationship. Or we have the opposite, which is just kind of this friend hangout system where everyone is just buddies and they do everything together. And it kind of is this false sense of community where no one's really staking a commitment to one another. And so it's become a free-for-all. And you know, it's weird, Bill, because we have a millennial generation that actually has a very high view of marriage. They desire it almost as much, if not as much, as the greatest generation, so our grandparents. But they are so fearful of it because they've seen their parents do it poorly. The largest divorce generation in history is the boomers. A lot of millennials grew up either without a dad in the home or with an absent dad. You know, and so very, very, you know, kind of shaky ground as far as that goes. And so as a result, they're like, well, I want to be known. I want to know others. I want real relationship, but I don't want to sign up for it too soon because I'm afraid I might mess it up. So they're practicing at marriage and all these relationships in the meantime and just treating them very, holding on to them very loosely.
Now, one of the sad things about this is how they are really torpedoing their chances for future marital success. And I know you've talked about this. Our friend Glenn Stanton from Focus on the Family has written on this whole issue of cohabitation and so many couples living together. And if you would, just recap that for just a bit for us. What happens to a person who, you know, makes that decision? And again, Christians are doing it, too, to live together before getting married. What happens to their chances of having a successful, long-lasting marriage?
Yeah, you know, what is crazy is that if you take faith out of the equation completely, so take any kind of Christian construct or faith construct, studies show, and these are multiple studies by sociologists and others, that there are no healthy indicators and there's no end-term goal or progress for someone who enters a cohabiting relationship. So not even with the faith component. So basically, the person who chooses to live with someone else, even though they're going in into it, and this is women especially do this, they think that it's going to breed more commitment, it's going to get them closer to marriage. It's actually doing the opposite. Cohabiting couples have larger rates of domestic violence within the relationship. They have less involvement on the part of the male, whether it's in you know, housekeeping duties, whether it's in just partnership in different decisions, they actually have a less chance of keeping the marriage together if they do eventually marry, so higher rates of divorce. Just every indicator on that front shows. And then the biggest one for me, Bill, that I talk to folks about is the fact that it keeps them in bad relationships longer. So the woman, say, for example, she's like, well, you know, this guy really isn't treating me well. This is going downhill. This isn't what I expected. But now we either share a rent or a mortgage together. Now we have this dog together. Maybe we have kids together at this point. So I better just stick it out. And as a result, she's in an unhealthy relationship, or he is, and they're in an inertia that's going to really not serve them well.
And, of course, there is a lot of research on what happens if a child enters that relationship. And one study I saw says that if a cohabiting couple has a child, there's a very high likelihood that the guy will be gone within 2 years, leaving that woman to raise the child on her own, which is tragic.
And it's actually very, I think a lot of women think, mistakenly, that if I have a child with this guy, then that's really going to solidify the relationship and it'll cause him to commit. And many times, even the child itself will not prompt marriage. It is just, and then the woman is left holding the bag. She is a single mom. She enters the system. And of course, things go downhill from there.
Not to mention the elevated risk of domestic abuse in cohabiting relationships and the fact that cohabiting partners are more likely to cheat on each other than people who are in a married relationship. It's just not a good place to go, and yet so many Americans are doing it, Lisa. You alluded to this earlier. Many of them saw their own parents' marriage fail, and so they don't want to make that same mistake. They say how much they want a soulmate. They want someone that they can commit to for life, but they're afraid, and so they think by kicking the tires on the relationship, by doing that test drive, that that will assure them, or that will give them confidence that somehow their marriage will work out, not realizing all along that they are shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, well, and to your earlier point, Bill, Christians are also starting to do this at an alarming rate. You would think, this isn't going to happen in the church. We're going to take some biblical wisdom. We're going to apply this. We're going to trust God with our lives and understand stories. And so we're going to hold out for God's best, but it's not happening. Christians are saying, I'm not getting the marriage that I wanted, so I'm going to settle for this in the meantime, or I'm going to at least test this person out and see how it's going. It's really setting us up for failure, even within the church.
We're going to talk about that more in just a minute, and how Christians should be approaching dating in the 21st century. Our guest is Lisa Anderson. She is with Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs, and the title of her new book is The Dating Manifesto, A Drama-Free Plan for Pursuing Marriage with Purpose. This is the Faith Radio Network. We'll take a quick break and be back with more with Lisa Anderson after this.
Bill Meyer Live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
Welcome back. My guest is Lisa Anderson from Focus on the Family. Lisa heads up the Boundless show and boundless.org. She's actually director of Young Adults for Focus. You've probably heard her on Faith Radio in the past, and she has a brand new book out called The Dating Manifesto, A Drama-Free Plan for Pursuing Marriage with Purpose. Now, if you're married yourself, but you know somebody who's single, maybe an older single, maybe somebody in their 30s, 40s, even 50s, who's either never married or maybe, they've been through a divorce and now they're thinking about reentering the dating scene once again. Encourage them to tune in for the next half hour or so, because Lisa has some great advice, great biblical, godly advice in this book. In fact, we have three copies of the book to give away, and we'd love to give one to you, especially if you are single. Or maybe you're a parent with a young adult son or daughter who is single and in the dating world, and you're thinking, yeah, I really want them to do it right. Give us a call in the next 25 minutes or so at 877-93-FAITH, and we'll put you into a drawing for a copy of one of Lisa's books, The Dating Manifesto. So, Lisa, we talked about kind of the landscape of the world and secular dating and secular singles. Let's talk about Christian singles for a minute. And unfortunately, many of them are not looking a lot different from their non-Christian friends and work associates, correct?
I mean, we did talk about that in reference to cohabitation. What we're seeing in the church itself are very similar dating patterns. Now, there's a frustration there, and it's very much, a lot of Christian singles saying, look at what the world is dishing out. This is what I see. And there's a lot of influence from Hollywood. There's a lot of influence from what they're seeing just among their friends, their peers. And so I think Christian singles are throwing up their hands because they're just not seeing a lot of forward momentum. You know, we just alluded a little bit ago about, you know, the previous generations and how it was like so assumptive. I mean, you kind of, you know, you did your schooling or you went off to a war and you came back and you got married. There was a natural progression for how marriage and family came about. But now it's a free for all. And we see young adults protracting their singleness into their late 20s, into their 30s and beyond. And in the meantime, they're taking on a lot of the patterns. It's an inertia. It's non-dating. It's dating with no direction, purposelessness. There's really not a script for how it should be done well.
Now, there is a term in the secular culture called friends with benefits, and that's basically two individuals who are willing to enter into a sexual relationship with no commitment. They're doing it strictly for pleasure, for, you know, recreation, if you will call it. That's a sad word to use, but unfortunately mm-hmm. It's true. Is your impression, whether this is based on, you know, what you know from the research or what you know from just anecdotal talking to other Christians, is this something that is becoming more and more common among Christians? Or do you believe that most evangelicals are still saying, you know what, I realize that sex outside of marriage is contrary to God's will, and I'm going to remain a virgin until marriage? Where do you think the majority of evangelical Christian singles are right now?
Yeah, I will say the majority of Christian singles at this point will say that sex outside of marriage is sinful, that it is sin. But what we're seeing increase is the number of those individuals who will also say, but I feel it's inevitable. And so they're kind of throwing in the towel. They're kind of, you know, they have this arbitrary timeline in their head. And I remember hearing a story of a guy who asked a well-known pastor, you know, basically he's like, look, he went up to him and said, I'm giving God till I'm 25. And if God doesn't get me married by 25, then I have to take matters into my own hands because I will not reach 30 without having had sex. And it was just this idea of I can't do it. There's no way that the culture will support me being a virgin all through my 20s, you know? And so what we're seeing within the church is kind of this frustration and a lack. I mean, I say, and I mentioned this in the book, it comes down to a complete lack of trust in God, because we don't believe that God's going to deliver, you know, he's not delivering on our timeline and according to our expectations. So something must be awry and we need to just, you know, throw in the towel and do what we need to do.
Well, let's talk about trusting God for a moment and striking a balance here, because there are some people I know who will say, you know, I'm just going to wait for God to deliver my knight in shining armor. You know, I'm not going to go out there in the dating world. I'm just going to, the ceiling is going to open up and this, you know, bright ray from heaven is going to, you know, shine down. And then this wonderful, handsome, godly man is going to be delivered into my kitchen. And then there are others who take things into their own hands, and they're on every online dating site and they're going out with somebody new every weekend and they're just working real hard at it. How do we strike a balance? Obviously, you know, I hate the expression "God can't steer a parked car," but I'm going to say it. I said it, so it's out there. But how do we strike a balance? You talked about inertia. You talked about not being proactive and not being intentional. So how do we, on the one hand, trust that God is going to take care of us and deliver, and on the other hand, not just sit in our little apartment waiting for a miracle?
Right. So, Bill, first of all, I was both of those people. I lived both of those extremes. So my 20s were basically treating marriage as a plan C. What I was focusing on was my education and career, because that is what I was told in the public schools, to take care of myself. And so I moved around the country. And for me, I figured, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tack on marriage sometime in the future, in my timing and on my terms, and I'll just make it happen and it'll be great. And so I just was very assumptive of marriage. Then I hit my 30s and I had a panic moment and I'm like, what in the world happened? This isn't where I thought I would be. You know, what am I going to do about it? So I entered my season of too many chances. And I got frantic and I got online, like, and when I say online, I'm talking like five different sites. I started going out with guys that probably I didn't have a business dating. They weren't in a position to marry. I mean, they were, you know, for all intents and purposes, Christians, you know, whatever, but we can talk about, you know, being actually dateable and marriageable. But so then I just got frantic, and it was like, oh, what am I going to do? And, you know, people ask me often, Bill, can you make the pursuit of marriage an idol? And I say, well, yeah, you can, if, you know, anything that's going to supersede your allegiance to Jesus Christ and his, you know, place in your life, it can be idolatrous. But at the same time, I think that we've kind of erred on the other side in our culture of kind of thinking too little of marriage and making it this, you know, oh, okay, well, you know, it's something that you need maybe to do only to, or don't do much of it, be about it, because that means you're desperate or not God. And so as a result, you know, it's kind of the two extremes. And so I think what we need to do, and I talk about this, you know, when you mentioned the inertia, is look at it as something that, God sees, first of all, as a good thing. He designed it. He planned it. It was his idea in the first place. It is normative for most people. In fact, Bill, over 80% of us, will get married at some point in our lifetime, and over 90% of young adults want to get married and believe they will someday. So it's not like everyone's just hating marriage. But at the same time, we do have to put some intention into and effort into it. And you probably heard, I've said this many times, the whole idea of why do we think that everything else in our life merits planning, merits purpose, merits intention, whether it's seeking a job or looking for housing or whatever. We get on the street, we pound the pavement, we network, we knock on doors, we write resumes, we interview. But when it comes to marriage, one of life's hugest decisions, we sit around, as you said, and say, okay, God, you know, I don't really know what to do, so I'm just going to sit here and hopefully you're going to bring someone amazing my way.
Oops, I think we lost. Go ahead, Lisa. Your phone's breaking up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, even Proverbs 18:22 says, he who finds a wife finds what is good and finds favor from the Lord. That is an active pursuit, and so we need to be honest about doing that.
Now, I've shared before on this program that I didn't get married until I was 40, so I was one of those long-term single bachelor dudes, and I wanted to get married, and I was probably more on the proactive side than the trusting God side, maybe too proactive. And I was doing the online dating thing, and I was always asking friends, hey, if you know somebody. And I was in a large singles ministry. I was actually on leadership in a large singles ministry. And those of us who were on the leadership team, you know, some of us did date within that group. And so I certainly did that. And yet, I think for the longest time, I kind of had the wrong list, if I can use that. I sort of had this list in my head of what I wanted in a mate. And, you know, I had certain criteria. Looking back, I think they were maybe somewhat unrealistic, you know, as far as what I could bring to the table. But, you know, I wanted somebody who had a certain look and who was, you know, athletic and had a master's degree and, you know, on and on and on. And I got to the point where I think I realized in my dating experience that I was meeting women who had many of the quote-unquote qualities that I thought were important, but they didn't have the qualities that God said were important. And what I mean by that is many of them really didn't manifest the fruit of the Spirit in their own life. And then there came a sort of a turning point for me. And I remember this, Lisa, and I think you'll appreciate this because you've done the online dating thing. But I was filling out one of those, you know, those lengthy profiles where you, you know, talk about all your biography and your interests and what you're looking for in the opposite sex and blah, blah, blah. And I started fresh, and I said, you know what? I'm going to talk about character, and I'm going to talk about, you know, some of these values that really I know that God wants for me. And I went right back to the fruit of the Spirit, and I talked about kindness and gentleness and patience and self-control. And I said, these are the things that's important to me. You know, that now there'd be a nice cherry on top if I was, you know, physically attracted to her, which I think is, you know, very important. And, you know, if she enjoyed some of the same activities that I liked. But really what was most important to me at that point in my life, because I was getting into my probably mid-late 30s, was I want somebody who's a godly woman and who really demonstrates those character qualities that I know God says are important. And you know what? I met her, and God came through in a big way and in kind of a miraculous way. with my wife Lisa. And man, oh man, if I was to take, you know, if I took Lisa and you met her, think, and you looked at the fruit of the Spirit, you looked at that list, she meets every one of those qualities, and she manifests those in her life, both as my marriage partner and as the mother of my children. And I'm so thankful that at some point, God kind of, through his Holy Spirit, bonked me over the head and said, this is what you want, Bill. This is what I want for you. And I think that was the turning point for me that helped me to finally get the right, find the right person.
Yeah. And it's so true, because I mean, I think that if a lot of 20 somethings sat down and thought to themselves, what's the type of person that 40 years from now I want to be going through life with? I want to be going through hardships with. I want to be growing old with. I want to be doing retirement with, or doing, you know, challenging health issues with. I think it would change our perspective on what we're actually looking for. Instead, we approach dating and the pursuit of marriage with a totally consumeristic mindset, where we're very much like, what are the things that are going to complete me, you know, a la the movie Jerry Maguire? What do I need? What's going to make me happy? And as a result, we're just seeing a lot of heartache when it comes down the road and couples hit a bump in the road and have issues, and both of them were just in it for themselves, and it becomes problematic.
What do you say to women or to men who are single and are dating and have that list? Do you encourage them to rethink the, I mean, a list of qualities is not bad if they're the right qualities. How do you counsel people on that regard?
Yeah, and I jokingly say this in the book. In junior high, I was told by a small group leader, we were all told to sit down and write our list for a future mate. And we were told to write 50 things on it. And I beautifully wrote all of my 50 things. And the first five were legit, you know, loves Jesus and that kind of stuff. But by the end of the list, I had, you know, hair color and heights and all kinds of things on there. And I say in the book, I say, you need to pare that list down to about four or five things. And that is a person who loves Jesus, is a disciple of Jesus Christ. And that means, like, for real. That doesn't mean that they retweet Francis Chan. It doesn't mean that they were born in Texas. It doesn't mean, you know, it's not all of these superficial things. They also need to be in a position to marry. Are they taking on responsibility in their life? Do they have a job? Have they owned their issues from the past, and are they working on them? Do they have good, accountable mentors in their life? Then is this person humble and teachable? I mean, you know this, Bill, entering into marriage. If you don't have a spirit of humility to deal with conflict, to communicate with your spouse, then you're just two people living under the same roof, and that's not going to get you very far. And then finally, is this a person who's calling you share, or who's calling you can join? That is very important as well, because you want to be moving in the same direction. Ultimately, you want to be serving the Lord better together than you would have apart. And so with those, just that little short list in hand, you can start dating people with confidence. And of course, then down the road, other things like, am I attracted to this person? All that. Does that come into play? That matters, but it doesn't need to keep you from dating on the front end.
Wow, some great advice. And again, Lisa has the list of these particular qualities in the Dating Manifesto. That is her new book. The subtitle is A Drama-Free Plan for Pursuing Marriage with Purpose. And we have three copies of Lisa's book to give away. If you call us here in the next 10 minutes or so, give us your contact information. Whether you are single yourself, or maybe you have an adult son or daughter, or a teenage son or daughter who's going to be entering the dating world, or maybe a grandson or granddaughter who is currently dating, get this book for them. So call us up, 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. We'll put you into the drawing for one of Lisa's books, The Dating Manifesto. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer. We'll take a quick break and be right back.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
Hey, so great to have you with us on the Faith Radio Network today. My guest is Lisa Anderson from Focus on the Family. Her new book is called The Dating Manifesto. And just a little plug for the book, Gary Thomas, who I just love. Gary is the author of Sacred Marriage and Sacred Parenting, The Sacred Search. He's written all these. He's just one of these guys that's so picking brilliant. puts me to shame. But he says, a wise book from a woman who understands the pressures of Christian dating and singleness as well as anyone in the world. If Gary Thomas is going to endorse this book, it's the book you want to get. And again, the subtitle is A Drama-Free Plan for Pursuing Marriage with Purpose. Lisa, let me ask you this. Is the church being helpful or not being helpful when it comes to encouraging godly dating relationships?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that, because I actually, one of my goals in writing this book was to actually address the church and parents of young adults and everyone who has singles in their life or in their sphere of influence, because I feel like you all have not been spoken to. So I think there's a lot of, you know, it's another murky kind of world out there when it comes to dealing with the church, because a lot of singles will say, you know, the church doesn't even care about me. You know, churches are largely programmed for married people and for families. You see that with Awana and kids choir and marriage conferences and whatever. So singles feel left out. But at the same time, singles desire marriage and family for the most part. And so what is the church doing to kind of help them along? And what I've seen a lot, you know, both with parents of young adults and the church, is they throw up their hands and say, well, I don't want to get involved in your love life. I'm not going to go there. You know, and some of them rightfully so, because they've been shot down, or singles are like, you know, don't talk to me about it. And so it's kind of this catch 22 of no one saying anything. And so I think what we need to do is do a better job of loving singles and folding singles into the life of the church, both for support and for service. Singles need to be right there serving alongside everyone else. What does it look like for marrieds and others to step into lives as single young adults and help move people towards marriage and help make good matches and do their part in, you know, I tell this with singles all the time. I said, here we are, we're out online, we're doing speed dating, we're just getting into all kinds of weird quagmires, when who are the best people to help us find a suitable marriage partner but the people who know and love us best and have our best interests at heart? And those are our family, our friends, our people within the church, our small groups. We need to be doing this better within the church. And so I try to give some encouragement and some structure for that within the book.
Is it wrong for a Christian single to talk to their married friends in their church and say, hey, I really, really want to be married. If you know somebody, let's say you're a woman, if you know a godly Christian guy, maybe he doesn't go to this church, maybe, you know, the husband works with him, maybe you know him from some other involvement, you know, community service, whatever it is. If you know a godly guy, I'd be open to an introduction. Or is that too blunt? What's your perspective on that?
No, that is absolutely necessary for her to say. This is where I made the mistake of not doing that. And then at some point, I can't remember how many years down the road it was, I mentioned this at church and everyone looked at me like, oh, I thought you were just all about your career. I never thought you wanted to get married. Where did this come about? And I'm like, what? How in the world could I not have communicated? And I realized I had just never really brought it up. I thought there was a lot of shame around it. Like if I spoke it aloud, it meant that I was too desperate or that I couldn't find someone on my own. We need to be talking about marriage as a good thing. The fact that marriage is to be honored by all, a la Hebrews 13:4. We need to be talking about it within the church if it is indeed normative for most folks. And it's a good thing. And, you know, the other thing I'll say, Bill, is married people need to start talking well about marriage themselves. I mean, I've heard some of the most discouraging and disheartening stories from married people within the church about, you know, just, oh, be glad you're single because it all goes downhill after that, or then you just have kids and it's a big mess, or you know, married people need to start honoring marriage and casting a great vision for it for the young adults in their churches.
That is so sad to hear. I know it's true, Lisa. And thank the Lord for Focus on the Family that's trying to make a difference in this regard and to strengthen marriages, come alongside those couples who are hurting, who are in conflict, and offering them resources and counsel. I thank God every day for what your organization is doing and you personally are doing in this regard. Let's talk about this is a thorny issue. But there seems to be this, for a lot of men, this extended adolescence thing that, and I think actually you mentioned to me once you had an experience with a guy who was sort of caught in extended adolescence, a guy, I think you met him online, and he would go home after work and spend the majority of his time playing video games. And if I remember correctly, he had a cupboard full of Count Chocula cereal. Tell me that story.
He actually could tell the difference between Count Chocula, Cocoa Pebbles, and what was the other one? I forget.
Cocoa Krispies?
Yes. Cocoa Krispies. Yes, that was his one of his talents. Even if not even using texture, Bill, so I could grind them up and still tell the taste difference. I think this is something because and you know this as a guy, guys want to be part of an adventure, and they want to be part of, you know, being taking risks and winning big and stuff. But, and I mentioned this in the book, this is where we've kind of gotten messed up, is that guys at this point, they want to win big, but they want to risk little. And so this is why we see them entering into, whether it's the world of video games or whether it's movie, you know, action hero franchises or comic book franchises, where they can be part of a big story, they can fight, they can feel like they're doing something big, but the risks are small. Whereas instead, men need to be stepping up, joining real battles in our culture today, and the battle for the family, for the gospel, for, you know, any kind of great battle. You know, who's stepping up? Where are the men when it comes to stepping up for the unborn or for those who are unheard in our culture or for those who are victims of sex trafficking? These are the battles that we need men in, and to start taking ownership of families and joining adulthood much sooner. And so that's where I think the church, especially men in the church, need to come alongside these guys and root for them and show them how it can be done well.
And it is sad. There's a large number of men. I think George Barna talks about this, large number of guys now moving into their 30s and even 40s who just sort of on that that non-inertia track and not really being intentional about marriage. And as I said, they their life, and as you just pointed out very unfortunately very well, that their lives are just consumed by screens and wasting away. And I'm not going to cast aspersions on every Christian man, because there's a lot of great examples of men who are doing it right, and thank the Lord for them. But gosh, you know, pastors to call some of these guys to real biblical manhood, and especially when it comes to treating women with respect and dignity, and for crying out loud, put that pornography away. And that is just that's a scourge of many Christian men. We know, even from Focus on the Family, some of the calls that you receive. You know, Lisa, I hate to say this, we are actually out of time. I want to mention the book title again. It's The Dating Manifesto, A Drama-Free Plan for Pursuing Marriage with Purpose. Lisa Anderson, thank you so much for your time today. May the Lord continue to guide you and direct you in your ministry. This is the Faith Radio Network, and we appreciate you making us part of your Saturday. We encourage you to stick around, because the weekend edition of Neil Stavem's Connecting Faith is up next, followed by my friend Austin Hill with Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. All the details at myfaithradio.com. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the program page for Dr. Bill Meyer Live.